And when I'm not sitting in on Coast to Coast, you can hear me Sunday nights at 11 p.m. Eastern on my weekly syndicated radio program, The Conspiracy Show, out of Toronto, on Zoomer Radio, AM 740 and 96.7 FM. Or you can find a radio station near you that carries the program. Just go to my website, strangeplanet.ca, strangeplanet.ca, find the radio page, and then once there, click on the affiliates page. And you can also listen live from wherever you are. Just download my free app, The Conspiracy Show. We are speaking with Xavier Hayes, Ancient Giants of the Americas. We'll get back to that conversation in a few moments, and then at the bottom of the hour, we will open up the phone lines for questions and comments. But I wanted to share with you an excerpt from the book. It's an article republished in Xavier's book. It's an article reported by the Baltimore American and Commercial on January the 6th, 1870. Get a load of this. While William Thompson, assisted by Robert R. Smith, was engaged in making an excavation near the house of the former, about a half mile north of West Hickory, preparatory to erecting a derrick, they exhumed an enormous helmet of iron, which was corroded with rust. Further digging brought to a light sword, which measured 9 feet in length. Curiosity incited them to enlarge the hole, and after a little time they discovered the bones of 2 enormous feet. Following up the lead they had so unexpectedly struck, in a few hours they had unearthed a well-preserved skeleton of an enormous giant, belonging to a species of the human family, which probably inhabited this and other parts of the world at the time of which the Bible speaks, when it says, "And there were in those days giants." The helmet is said to be in the shape of those found among the ruins of Nineveh. The bones of the skeleton are remarkably white. The teeth are all in their place, and all of them are double and of extraordinary size. These relics have been taken to Tionesta, where they are visited by large numbers of people daily. When his giantship was in the flesh, he must have stood 18 feet in his stockings. These remarkable relics will be forwarded to New York early next week. Again, this was an article published in the Baltimore American and Commercial on January the 6th, 1870. We'll discuss further when I continue my conversation with Xavier Hayes, Ancient Giants of the Americas, right here on Coast to Coast AM. And we are back with Xavier Hayes, Ancient Giants of the Americas, Suppressed Evidence and the Hidden History of a Lost Race. There's also a passage in your book, Xavier. It's from the history of the Choctaw, Chickasaw, and Natchez Indians. And accounts, or the tradition of the Choctaw Indians of, and I guess this is along the Mississippi River, they're talking about a race of giants, white giants, 10 feet high, and far more rich and powerful than any white people now living. 10 feet. I mean, have any skeletal remains been found of giants in that range, 10 feet or higher?
Yeah, there are a few, actually, of 10 feet and higher, some 12 feet, too, especially in the areas in California, near, like, the Baja areas, where the Tuburon Indians were. And even in the conquistador times, when Coronado was marching up toward, looking for El Dorado, he had a first-hand encounter with one of these Tuburon Indians that, one of his patrolmen who were going up the coast had found and brought him back to show him. And this, they had estimated during, Coronado's time that this guy was at least 10 feet tall. And when they excavated some of these areas in California, they found, a few of these skeleton, 10 feet tall skeletons. In the Pennsylvania area as well, they have discovered 10 feet to 12 feet tall. Some of the mounds discoveries, 10 to 12 feet giants. My favorite personal account is the Count of Paxton Hayes, and this is, you know, in the 30s, he discovered a lost, what the Sonora, in the Sonora, Mexico area, kind of southern Arizona, northern Mexico, he had been on the looking for rare snakes. You know, he was, herpetologist. And he's been intrigued by one of the local myths that up in these canyons was the race of this giant white race that had been, from the flood, before they, the local tribes that even got there. So Paxton Hayes actually found this buried, lost tombs of this, this mysterious tribe. And, it was a big deal. It was all over the news. He had found mummified 12 feet, tall giants. And moreover, he found robes, which is baffling, giant robes. He had found different types of hieroglyphs on plates. And, it was a big deal. And he took these robes. You can even see pictures of this. It's incredible. If you go on Google and you look at Paxton Hayes and, search for this article, you'll find archives. But he ended up in D.C. showing off this robe, just however old it was. They assumed to be, at least 10,000 years old. Most of the time, in these giant discoveries, you'll read that because the bones are so old, that once they're brought up to the surface, they just immediately crumble. So it's fascinating that this robe had been preserved. And, of course, like usually what happens when you deal with the Smithsonian, you never hear or see from your artifacts again, and this is kind of what happened. The robe was left with him, and then he never got it back, and basically he was made some other discoveries, but they kind of shut him down and prevented him from, getting any access or getting any sort of traction. And the robe, is lost. And it's incredible, but, we have actual visual, proof of this.
Photographic evidence.
Yeah, exactly. And even reports from the Smithsonian Charter themselves. Like, there's a, if you read one of the ledgers, admitting to accepting the robe. So, it's there. The question is what happened.
So there is a paper trail. In some cases, we have a ledger from the Smithsonian proving that they took possession of some of these, well, in this case, a robe. Are there ledger entries that would prove that the Smithsonian took possession of skeletal remains?
Not so much because, this was a recent, this was in the 40s, late
right.
30s, Paxton Hayes' case. Usually what we have is the record from the papers. Who's to say if you kind of went through and tried to archive or tried to see what they actually have, what was scrubbed from the record as well.
Right. This to me is the most amazing evidence, these accounts from these newspapers, numerous accounts. Now, I can understand why the Smithsonian would sort of dig in their heels or try to suppress this because it doesn't fit the narrative. But I'm thinking some enterprising traveling sideshow like Barnum and Bailey, P.T. Barnum, you would think that one of those enterprises would have gotten a hold of one of these skeletons and taken it on tour across the country. I mean, there would have been money to be made.
Well, they did.
Is there any evidence that any of these sideshows had these giant skeletons?
Problem is the hoaxes, and there were so many of that going on back in the day. So, that always throws a monkey wrench in the sort of sideshow work. The Irish giant, was well known throughout Europe, his little tour, before it kind of vanished. But then you have the Cardiff giant, which is a total fake. So you have few instances of actual giant curiosities, but they get buried within the tons of hoaxes that were on display because, you know, people wanted to make a buck, you know. Times were hard back then.
Sure, yeah. but if P.T. Barnum, for example, yes, he was a hoaxer, but if he had in his possession, let's say, a 12-foot skeleton of a giant, 12-foot, and took that on tour, but at the same time, he could have it authenticated.
Yeah, and then at the same time, it would end up disappearing as well. We know Ripley had the giant skull found in Amsterdam. You know, that was massive skull, like, they estimated that a size of a 13-foot-tall person. The skull was like five times bigger than what we normally see. And he paraded that around. That was in his museum. That was one of the prized possessions, and then it disappeared. So we do have some historical evidence of that happening. As for, you know, P.T. Barnum, I'm not too much of an expert on what he had or not. But yeah, I would assume that, you know, you got the bearded lady and, you know, the freaks, like, you definitely want to have some giant, especially because, you know, America is a Christian nation, and most Christians have this, you know, upbringing that, you know, I think we all have this sort of, like you said, you know, you're into it because of the giants, because of the Bible. And, you know, David and Goliath, you know, so I think we have this disposition to kind of be interested in these ideas. So it's, you know.
Sure, we were brought up with these stories.
Right, but and they, century, you know, salesmen could have tapped into that market easily.
To be sure. There are still countless burial mounds up and down the Ohio Valley and just across North America. Do you think that there may still be remains of giants in these burial mounds, or have they pretty much all been looted and excavated?
Yeah, it's hard. Then very few mounds remain, and the ones that do, you know, are usually in areas where they're protected or they're surrounded by a college campus or something, like the ones in Louisiana. I would like to think that with, you know, LIDAR and all these sort of scanning technologies that we have nowadays, they should be able to kind of 3D map a grid of if there are any giants buried in these. Unfortunately, most were destroyed and not preserved, or if they were preserved, they ended up in lost Smithsonian or to private hands.
Now, according to the Bible accounts, I believe when giants are first mentioned in Genesis, and you had mentioned Moses sending his spies and his generals into Canaan, and they came back with reports of giants that were so large that I think it was Joshua describing, we were like grasshoppers in their midst. So we're talking about giants that were, I don't know, 30, 40 feet tall. I mean, how do we reconcile? We have those accounts of giants 30, 40 feet tall, and then by comparison, you know, the ones that were running around in North America, even the 12-footers, I mean, relatively pint-sized compared to those giants, the denizens of the Old Testament.
Yeah, and it's, I think this has to do with just the, you know, over time, the dwindling of the stature, you know, after being eradicated. So the weaker genes, you know, that had survived, you know, which makes the West interesting, you know, in the fact that it had been unconquered for so long, except for, you know, the Mayans and the native tribes. You know, when the conquistadors first came over, the fact that they would still encounter a giant-like race, you know, was incredible. Because that had been eradicated thousands of years already, you know, in Europe and down into in the Holy Land. So, and I think in the Bible what we see is the evidence, which it states, you know, of, you know, the initial hybrid, you know, the giants of the Nephilim, you know, the initial, which were had to have been taller. And, you know, by the time those that survived the flood, you know, then you have, obviously, they're just going to get weaker and shorter. still pretty tall during Moses' time, you know, and then basically just being worn on and being eradicated, and having to like kind of head up to, I guess, into Europe or whatever, and try to remain. And you know, who's to say that those that remain, you know, aren't part of that redheaded cannibalistic tribe that, you know, we talk about earlier in the show. So
do you believe, Xavier, that the giants that came to settle in North America and South America and elsewhere, that they originated in what we now call the Holy Land and Canaan and so forth, and they were driven out of there? You think that's where they came from originally?
Yeah, I think originally, definitely. That sort of, those experiments seem to have been going on in that region in general, right? So I think that's kind of the origin of that specific race and, you know, this humanoid experiment. And I think over time, after being almost eradicated, you know, it's just expansion, right? You're going to want to survive, you're going to head north, you're going to head south, you're going to go whatever, you're going to go across the ocean, and then just kind of branch out. And I think that's kind of what we see. But that's just also with the mixture of Denisovans and Neanderthals and all these other subgroups. You know, it's a cluster bomb. We don't know. We're discovering new stuff every day, and you know, science has to be open, academia has to be open to. It's not supposed to be so closed to the point where it is now. You know, they don't even want you talking about this, or the fact they're even talking about ancient giants is amazing and it's interesting. As a writer, you know, I try to make it. I give you the facts. I don't really have an opinion. I object. I just, you know, give you the facts and try to make the story entertaining, and you know, make it readable. Because we need to read more. And, you know, that it's just such a off-kilter topic that's rarely discussed. But when it is, it's so fascinating, and it resonates to, like, all of our cores, I think. Like, you know, I think all of us have this sort of, in us, you know, to this curiosity. I think so it kind of resonates on the molecular level of us. And it's,
well, speaking, you know, of the molecular level, I'm wondering that, if there was, in fact, this commingling of the races, of giants with indigenous people, giants with other populations, there must then be a remnant, some sort of a genetic marker, a DNA anomaly that many people carry that could be traced back to this race of giants. Has anything like that been researched?
Yeah, but the problem is they don't want to admit this whole giant thing even exists, so they're always going to be an unknown factor. Like, we know, like, they have to admit that, excuse me, that two, you know, that the Neanderthals had sex with, like, some other unknown, you know, humanoid. Like, they have to, like, they're admitting it by not admitting it, basically, you know, and because science is showing, like, all these DNA research that they're doing on the Neanderthals and Denisovans and, you know, these new, I think the red cave deer people, another recent discovery that they found in Indonesia. And then we have the hobbits, who they are admitting were an ancient race, but they're not part of archery, you know, like they're a whole separate, there might be a whole separate sort of subdivision contained within all of this, you know, DNA mysteries and humanoid mysteries. You know, then if they talk about not understanding what the missing link is, and then they don't want to talk about possible genetic interference by an alien race as well, you know?
Right. It's a real problem, because it doesn't fit the narrative. So best to just kind of push it aside and not talk about it. We'll take a time out, come back, and open up the phone lines. Questions and comments for Xavier Hayes, Ancient Giants of the Americas. Here are the Zombies taking us into the break with This Will Be Our Year, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Stay with us. Polish archaeologists have uncovered the medieval remains of three quote-unquote vampires, individuals whose bodies were mutilated before internment to physically prevent any attempts to rise from the grave. Dating to the 13th and 14th centuries, the deviant burials were unearthed in a village in western Poland. They were found near a former bishop's residence. A Gothic cathedral once stood somewhere near the grave, according to a spokesman with the Museum of Fortress Kostrzyn in Poland. Two skeletons belonging to a woman and a man bear the signs of various mutilations carried out with sharp objects. Both skeletons had holes in the spine, most likely from someone nailing the bodies into the ground. Buried face down, a treatment aimed to impede the individual from rising from the grave. With her knees deliberately broken, the woman is believed to have suffered from kyphosis, an exaggerated rounding of the back. You can read more about the vampire burials in western Poland in the In the News section. Our webmaster tonight, Greg Bishop, has posted it there at coasttocoastam.com. Hey, George Norrie is back in the air chair tonight, Monday, on Coast to Coast AM. In hours one and two, successful entrepreneur, author, and speaker Jason Bowden-Smith founded one of the largest and most successful contaminated land consultancy companies in Australia. He'll discuss the harmful effects of living in a technologically connected world and will offer simple and practical measures that people can take to protect themselves without feeling they've been having to compromise the lifestyle they want. In the second half, life coach Monica Sawyer will discuss the many ways people can improve their lives, feel happier, and how to cope with the holidays, which for many, let's face it, it's stressful and lonely when they don't have to be. That's Monday night tonight on Coast to Coast AM when George Norrie is back in the air chair. I see the phone calls are lining up, and we'll get to those questions and comments for Xavier Hayes, author of Ancient Giants of the Americas, when Coast to Coast AM continues right after this. All right, let's get to as many of these calls for Xavier Hayes as we can. East of the Rockies, Rusby, a trucker in Oklahoma. Welcome to Coast. Good morning.
Morning, Richard, Mr. Hayes.
Good morning.
Morning.
This is a great show. I'm glad to hear this topic being discussed. Got some information you may be interested in. About a year ago, I read a book. Can't remember the author's name, but the book was called Quanah Parker, The Last Comanche Chief. And Quanah Parker's mother was Cynthia Ann Parker. She was a white girl that was captured by the Comanches at a young age. Well, the white men recaptured her after she had three or four children by an Indian chief. She'd assimilated into the tribe and didn't want to be recaptured. But the part of this book was discussing different children that had been captured. And they was talking about one boy. He was 12 or 13 when he was captured, and he wasn't with the tribe very long before the white men recaptured him. But he told them of a story of he was captured either by the Apache or the Kiowas. And he told them a story that an Indian chief took him to a mountain that overlooked a valley and showed him the ruins of a city and told him that the city was inhabited by giants and that because they were so proud and wicked, that the Great Spirit came and wiped them out. I thought that was very interesting and just kind of backs up what you're saying here.
Yeah, more corroborating evidence. Xavier, are you familiar with his book on The Last Comanche Chief?
I'm not, but that's very interesting and definitely backs up most of these accounts and these oral histories of the natives. Also very interesting is Chief Joseph, the Nez Perce leader, when he was captured, they found in his medicine bag a 6-inch tablet with Sumerian writing on it. So the tablet was from Iraq.
And oh, my.
Where he got it, he said, my white ancestors, my white giant ancestors. So very fascinating history that we still have preserved in these from the natives and basically from westward expansion.
Rusby, thank you for the call. One has to wonder, is there an indigenous people anywhere in North America that doesn't have, as part of their creation legend or their just their lore, a nation that doesn't have stories about giants? Have you encountered one?
No, basically most, I mean, maybe the newer ones don't, but pretty much the all of the ancient and the oldest, they all have this. They basically all share the same story.
I don't know to what extent you are engaged in conversation or reaching out to various native groups, but I'm wondering whether the elders are willing to talk about this aspect of their history, or is it something that they prefer not to talk about?
Yeah, they don't really. The ones that are around, because it's sacred to them, you know, they will. They admit it, but they're not too interested in telling a tourist or, you know, the white man these things.
As I suspect.
Hard enough to have the actual histories, you know. I try to keep in the book, I try to have the most collection I could get of, you know, these oral histories, which are dwindling and few and far between.
Well, it's important that you chronicle these things, because when we rely upon an oral tradition, sometimes these things are forgotten. Wildcard line, Annie is in Alabama. Annie, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Well, thank you. Well, if a giant or any other Homo sapien were killing and cannibalizing anybody in my neighborhood, I would consider it a homicide, justifiable. I would not consider it a murder, because murder is an unjustifiable homicide by modern day law. And I also would like to comment that about the Smithsonian, they are reputed to have a whole lot of things that they don't even know about. And most of the items there, probably they don't know they have, or they've lost track of things. That's the reputation they have. Have you heard that?
Yeah, they don't. They definitely have a very good reputation, especially with losing all of these giant artifacts or anything related to the ancient giants, or even anything that has to do with elongated skulls or ancient astronaut theories.
I can see them inadvertently losing an artifact here or there, but if we're talking about, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of cases of skeletal remains, I find it hard to believe that they weren't deliberately disappeared.
Yeah, right. We get into the cover-up category.
All right, let's go to the wild card line again. Mike is in West Palm Beach, Florida. Mike, good morning.
Yeah. If you go to Google and you type in giant skeletons, you will see pictures of photos of giant human beings, 30, 40 feet tall. One of them comes from Saudi Arabia. And the caption says, this picture was taken from a helicopter. They were doing some kind of survey work with gases or something, gas or oil, and they took it from a helicopter. But then they say underneath it, don't believe what you're seeing. These were all photoshopped. There's giant skeletons from Ireland and other countries, and they tried to announce the whole thing, saying it's all lies. It's all made up by crazy people. Have you looked into those skeletons from Saudi Arabia at all?
Yes, I have, and those definitely are fake. And the problem is, you know, you have the few genuine ones in midst of, you know, a whole bunch of fakes, which is unfortunate, but it's just kind of how it is in the internet age. What we do know is real is the mummified giant finger from ancient Egypt that nightclub the owner from Sweden documented. He got it from one of the Bedouin tribes. I think it was about 13 inches or so, or it was long enough to be the equivalent, I guess the doctor said, would have been a 13-foot-tall giant. And you could see it. Like, you could go Google that, and it's blow your mind, and it's actually a real thing, you know. And and in ancient Egypt, of course, you know, a lot of the hieroglyphs are giants. You know, a lot of these pharaohs are actually shown to giants, and you can see that this proportion of the people, and not to mention you have the ancient megalithic structures there, like the Osirian temple in Abydos. Mind-blowing, makes no sense at all. So, you know, there is true genuine accounts and true pictures in the midst of all the fake, but you have to look at it, and you have to be able to discern and, you know, do it with an open mind, you know, not just negative and think, oh, they're all fake. You know, that's kind of what they want you to think, so you stop your investigation.
All right, let's go west of the Rockies, and DJ is in Springfield, Oregon. DJ, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Good morning, guys. I got a pretty bad phone, but other than that and stuff, there are giants. Believe me, I'm the shortest in the family. I'm 6'4". And my giants are redheads, they're nephews and cousins, and they're all over 6'8". All my brothers are over 6'8". So, and they come from a family called the Filipeks out of northern Czechoslovakia, which is called Bohunk Land, plus we're Norskies too, and they're all redheads.
All right, I want you to count the fingers on your hands and the toes on your feet. How many do you have, DJ?
Hey, believe it or not, two of my cousins have 6 toes.
Oh, really?
Aha! They live in Montana, and it's from the Filipek family, and it's northern Czechoslovakian, and there's a little bit of mixture of somewhere out of the Northland, because I got Norwegian in me, too. So, and I'm the short one. I'm the 6'4 guy.
They call you Tiny.
And these guys are big, too. I mean, you're talking about 13-inch hands and stuff. These guys can grab a basketball, they go half around it. You know, it's amazing. And they have played basketball for different colleges and stuff, but these guys are big. I mean, they don't, and they don't back up either.
DJ, but, final question. There are no cannibals in your family tree, are there?
Came to the point, probably. No. That's the active survival stuff.
Right.
They relocated out of northern Czechoslovakia or Bohunk Land.
Fascinating.
To Montana. Well, they actually came down from Canada into Montana. But these guys are big guys.
I'll say. Well, I wouldn't want to get on the wrong side of your family. DJ, thank you for checking in from Springfield, Oregon. Wildcard line, Jerome is in Denver. Hi, Jerome. Welcome.
Hey, how you doing, Richard or Mr. Hayes?
Well, thank you.
Listen, I'm going to tell you a little quick story. I lived in Alamosa, Colorado. It's a little small town in southern Colorado. Back in 1967, all my grade school friends, we all went to this little store called Piggly Wiggly's, and they had this music playing, and all of a sudden we see this huge man coming down the aisle, and usually, you know, the shelves are like maybe 6-7 feet tall, right? This guy's shoulders stood above that, and a lot of the other kids were kind of scared, but I wasn't. And just like you, Sir Richard, you're infatuated with these giants. I too been infatuated ever since I met this giant. And anyway, they had this table full of pitchers. And I looked at the pitcher, and it said King Corn. And then right next to it says 8'2". And he was shaking hands with all the kids. And once he shook my hand, I'm like, this guy was a monster. He was a giant. And I was amazed by this guy, you know. So ever since then, I've been, infatuated with giants. And Mr. Hayes, you said earlier in the broadcast that you said that when they did find some giant bones, that they were 7 foot and maybe 8 foot. But I think theoretically that if you're going to call them a Nephilim, they have to be 9 foot and older.
That's the cutoff point, is it? 9 foot and over? Okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, I believe the same thing, you know, what so-called giant, that they're finding these 7 foot ones, they're still part of that lineage, but, you know, obviously they're more de-evolved. So, yeah, you know, I'm more into the actual further back lineage, which would be, you know, over 9 foot, absolutely. And I also had a giant encounter when I was a kid that kind of, you know, made me definitely interested in this subject before I even knew what it was. My grandfather took me to a wrestling match, and, you know, Andre the Giant was there. And, you know, he kind of came up to the people, you know, by the barricade, and it just, you know, put his hand out. This is a massive hand, and it was huge, and it was amazing. And, you know, this is why these encounters and this lore is so prevalent throughout our genetics and our history, and it's you know, it's something's going on. You know, there definitely were giants.
Well, regrettably, my only encounter is when shopping at the Giant Tiger. Do you have those in the U.S.? Not sure. I don't know if they do. We have Giant Tiger. It's a store, a shopping store. First time caller Wayne is in Dayton, Ohio. Wayne, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Good morning. Hey, I just had a real simple question. It's the clips that I see on YouTube. You see a person standing next to a footprint, but it's on a vertical face of a boulder or, you know, like a rock wall. What would the explanation be of how that footprint, you know, became on a vertical surface instead of, the flat plane that we walk on?
And you've seen this on YouTube, Wayne? I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I've seen like three different images. You know, there's one where this footprint looks like it's every bit of 4 feet, or, 48 inches, and then the other ones are maybe 30 inches.
So almost as if someone was walking up the vertical face of a cliff.
Yeah.
All right. Xavier, what do you say? What do you know?
This is the footprint in South Africa that Michael Tellinger talks about, and you can see it on YouTube. And I think the explanation is that it's from like an earthquake or it's so old that, you know, it's part of the repositioned landmass or something. I'm not quite too sure, but you can definitely check it out on YouTube.
Right. So the rock has moved. It's not as if someone was walking up a vertical a face.
No, right.
All right. Let's try and squeeze in Leslie, east of the Rockies from Detroit, Michigan. Leslie, good morning.
Yes, how y'all doing? I just wanted to mention that I have a brother-in-law that's like 9 foot, 10 foot tall. Okay, and I also seen when I
wait a minute. Wait, 9 or 10? Are you sure? Because I think the world record, aside from the Giants, was it Robert Wadlow that was eight and a half or something?
You could say like 8 feet.
Okay,
8 feet. I mean, he was real tall. Okay, and there's wow. Another guy that's a white guy, and he was at a techno fest in Detroit. He stood about, he was muscle bound, and he stood about like 8 foot and 9 foot tall, you know?
Well, there's still a few of them out there, I guess. Leslie, yeah. Thanks for checking in from Detroit. Appreciate it. All right, Xavier, we are done. So thanks for the hang for 2 hours. Ancient Giants of the Americas. How do people get a hold of the book?
Amazon's always the best place. You get it at Barnes & Noble or request it at your local library.
All right, and give us a website.
For me, just add me on Facebook, but definitely the Amazon. You know, just Google my name, and it'll come up.
Xavier Hayes, Xaviant Hayes, Haze. Ancient Giants of the Americas. Thanks, Xavier. Good talking to you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right. For George Norrie, George Knapp, Lisa Lyons, Stephanie Smith, Tom Danheiser, Dan Galante, Chris Burrows, Greg Bishop, Nathan Staten, Donna Walker, and here in Toronto, Nathan Smith, Scotty Guest, and Tom Schenck, I'm Richard Serrett. Thank you for your ears and your voices, your beautiful voices. Until next time, so long for now.